You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for May 31st, 2022. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat feature, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let us know if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start, as usual, by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called Piece of Cake. The assignment was to identify a clutter issue that disrupts the household peace and make a plan to address the problem. We want to hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who answered the questions about what is disrupting the peace and took some action about that this week. YouTube viewer Laura shared this comment. My husband just doesn't like the activity of decluttering because he feels there are more useful and interesting things to work on. Don't we all? So I move things along by going through languishing boxes and querying him quickly about what should stay or go. This usually precipitates a long explanation about what he may do with the items or how much they're worth. I've learned to tell him that I don't need to hear his reasoning. I don't outwardly judge his choices in that moment. I just want to have a quick decision on what stays and what goes. I get a small window to encourage a bit of movement in the right direction. What do you think about that, Gail?
I have that experience with clients a lot, actually, where I am holding something up and saying, is it staying or is it going? And I get this long explanation. And then at the end I go, but what question am I asking you? Is it staying or is it going? Thank you for sharing. Is it staying or is it going? And so you can see how we have stories attached to our stuff. And sometimes telling the story is a big part of the process of dealing with it. And it sounds like you're having that same experience with your husband, but you've reached a nice compromise. So you're getting him to look at things and you're doing it in bite-sized chunks that he can deal with, which is great. And hopefully you're getting to release some items in the process. Yes, of course, there's always something more interesting to do, but as you well know, avoiding these things forever only means that you die in a hugely stuffed house. So it's good that you're trying to move the stuff along as you process, help him process it, and you know, help him look at the pieces in moments in time where he will focus for 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever and get some things done. And then, you know, he just makes the decision. You're sort of acting as an organizer in this moment. You get the box, you show him the stuff, he tells you yes or no, and then you do everything afterwards in response to the request. It's staying, and then you figure out how to store it. It's going, and then you figure out how to disperse it. And so good for you for taking on that role. And I'm sorry that he is not participating more, but just keep telling yourself everything that he releases is one less thing that his kids have to throw away after y'all are gone. That's what we're saying. Good job.
Anya reports about the tittle. I still feel that I have too much stuff, though my place is totally organized and not overly stuffed at all. Some things on top of the huge closet drive me wild because there is one thing my husband bought, which we never got to use. I want clutter gone. I crave far less stuff. It's interesting how your threshold changes you know, you get comfortable with less, and your standard changes.
Yeah, you recognize how much noise the stuff is making. And once you stop getting numb to it, then you really register how loud it is, right? And in a small place, all of the, you know, the storage starts to go up the wall, things start to get up over your head in order to store them. And it becomes noisier, I think. When things hang over your head, there's an added dimension of, it's falling on top of me a little bit. And I think that that makes things noisier as you have to run your storage up in the air. And so it may be time to pull down some things that we bought and never used and decide if it can go. And, you know, maybe you're, after all these years of decluttering on you, maybe you're getting more minimalist in your persuasion. Maybe you're really liking that idea better. And you can always go through stuff again. Like, you may have organized it all, and maybe it's time to thin it down a third time. Go through it again and see if you can let things disappear. Sometimes you do round one and figure out you have to live with all this stuff. This must be what you have to have to survive. And then you live with it for a year and you realize, oh no, actually, I just couldn't decide to let go of it the first time. But now on second pass or third pass, I can decide, yes, my moment of panic about needing this has passed, and I can let some more things go. So might be worth going back through some things to see if you can thin the collections out some more. Good luck with that.
Well, and you know, that book you kept, that book you talked yourself into keeping or talked yourself out of getting rid of because you were absolutely going to read it soon, and it's been sitting there now for 2 more years.
And you absolutely did not read it.
It might be time to reevaluate that.
Well, and you give that 2-year parameter, right? Like, you made a decision to keep it for whatever reason, and 2 years later, that reason still hasn't manifested. Then you can go, yeah, I was just kind of lying to myself in order to keep it because it was stressing me out to decide to let it go. But 2 years have gone by and all of the good reasons I came up with before have not come to pass. I can probably live without it. Is a very good point. Absolutely.
Connie says, I am halfway through decluttering our very busy entrance hall, trying to keep defensible space. I guess you threw that term out last week.
Yeah.
Talking about
one of the commenters did. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting a kitchen counter clean and making,
defending it. I like the idea of defending it. That's a great, the great way of like, stay away from my counter. I really like that idea. It's excellent.
M says, my pets are disrupting the peace. They trash the place. They seem to think it's their job.
Yeah, that is part of the pet parameter.
They are a little harder. They're harder to enroll in the
whole decluttering
thing. Process.
It's true.
You may have to enforce the rules about how many toys may be out at any specific time.
Right. Yeah. Pet care comes with 100% cleanup behind the pet. The pet does not understand the whole pick it up and put it back thing very much.
Karen says, my husband and I started decluttering our back room and made quite a bit of progress.
Excellent. Good for you.
And Rowan said, I have been learning not to resent that my housemate doesn't clean because he does all my shopping for me and does all the transport driving. I have passed anger over kitchen counter wars, in quotes, with housemates and did not realize how much it affects me.
So you're saying that it's sort of a leftover residual feeling from previous experiences. And now in this situation, you guys have decided to divide up the duties. He goes shopping and he drives and you are in charge of cleaning. So you're, like we were discussing, divvying up responsibilities last week. And this is one of the ways that you divvy up, which is okay. As long as that works for you. If you find that it doesn't work for you, then maybe it would feel better if he added something else to his list. If you're going to be completely in charge of cleaning, then maybe he needs to add something else to his list to make it more equal to you. I'm not sure whether it feels equal yet or not, but fair point that you're recognizing that other experiences are coloring this one, and you're having to notice what's real just in this one and not have it be overshadowed by previous experience, I guess. Yeah. Good job.
Susan shared, I had surgery last Wednesday, so have been stuck at home staring at my clutter, and my clutter has been staring back. I realized that what I've been accepting as normal for me is no longer okay. I'm going to start addressing clutter in my bedroom by making a morning appointment with myself each day, even if only for 15 minutes. Hopefully I can clear this and get my bedroom painted sometime soon instead of the day before I go into assisted living or nursing care.
Yes, we would vote for that for you as well. And you will be amazed if you actually do 15 minutes a day and you get to the end of the week and you have done that 6 times or 7 times, you will be amazed at how much will be different. That 15 minutes accumulates over time. And the longer you keep that appointment up, the better and better and better your room is going to look. And suddenly it's going to be time to paint your room and you're going to be so happy. So good for you. Good for you for realizing that you've had it up to here. You had it up to here and you're done and you're ready to do something different. Let's go for it. And we will be here to support you all the way.
Marcia says, thanks to Gail and Ed and the truth shared and recorded on video, I was able to reclaim some peace in the garage. No more tripping over things to get through. I have been jumping around from different areas that are stealing the peace. It's a good filter. It's a good lens.
Right? Like this has been annoying me a lot and now I can fix it and then it doesn't annoy me anymore. And the garage, you know, there's something about the garage. It's just, it feels like this outdoor space that we really don't have to care about and we really don't have to notice, except that the fact that it's not climate controlled doesn't change the fact that there's stuff in there and that it's in the way and it's making it hard to park the car. It's making it hard to get in the house or whatever. And why should you have to run a gauntlet? I have to tell you, every time I go out in my garage and I go out the door and I walk across an empty garage floor to the trash can or the recycle bin on the other side, and I just grin the whole time I'm going across the floor because it's 100% clear and I can stand in this big empty space. And that makes me so happy every time I go out there. Totally worth the blood and sweat that we did in order to make that happen. I love it.
Anita has a comment that makes a good point about how important the honest communication is. She said, we just got a new leaf blower / vacuum, which my brother kept leaving in the living room. The living room.
The leaf blower?
Yes. We agreed to make a space for it in the garage, which we could both reach, or to keep it during pauses in work in the basement, which opens to the backyard where it is used. I wanted to keep it in the yard shed, but I could see he considers that my space for gardening stuff.
So it may be too far away. Like it's too much of a hassle to get it out from the yard shed.
Or maybe he's worried about, you know, going in and out of a space that is primarily yours, you know, primarily Anita's. Right. And so he's being at one time respectful of that space that is her domain, but not the living room.
Not the living room. I know that thing. That's so hilarious. But that's such a guy thing. Oh yeah, I'll just put this leaf blower here until the next time I need it. Who cares that there's bugs and dirt on it? We don't care about that at all. Like, yeah.
Well, the leaf blower stays pretty clean, but it's also, you know, I hope it's not a gasoline powered one. Maybe it's an electric one. They do make battery ones, I think.
Right, that you or plug electric. In. Okay. Yeah. All right. But nonetheless, not a typical appliance that you would keep in the house. So I can see the objection to, you know, this is the living room, right? Like, why would we leave this here? And so good for you to come up with a compromise. And at least, you know, I mean, if you're in some place where the weather gets cold in the winter, you maybe don't want the leaf blower outside getting frozen or overheated or something. And so it might need to be in something climate controlled, in the basement or the garage is at least better than outside. And so sounds like you found a good compromise. Good job on that. That's so funny. That's such a guy thing. Let me just leave this leaf blower here next to the couch.
Samudra said, Samudra said, I've never managed to teach a cat to put its toys back in the basket.
No.
I think it's probably that you have actually taught them and now they're just not doing it out of defiance. Right? That's how cats are.
That's how cats are. Cats are like, oh, you want it in the basket? Never mind. That's totally true.
Kara mentioned, I may have missed this in last week's conversation, but she said, I mentioned defensible space, saw the term in California as cutting down 100-yard or foot swath of brush around the house to keep it safe from wildfire. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good analogy. You want, right? You need to make your defensible space.
The so fire that, break.
Yeah. The argument break.
Right. Right.
Don't put it in this space and I won't have to yell at you.
And we won't start an argument. That's excellent. Y'all are funny today. Making me laugh.
Okay. We should probably get to our main topic.
Yes, please.
Sometimes we recognize the negative impacts of clutter on our lives, but still feel powerless to manage the conflicting feelings that keep us stuck. So we give in to panicked impulses to defer decisions for another day. Today, we're going back to a topic we've talked about a few times before, decluttering algorithms, simple, practical rules you can establish that help you set aside some of the emotions and gain more clarity in your decision-making.
We've talked about algorithms before today. This is the third time we've covered it, but based on the feedback we get, it's a topic area that our listeners find helpful. Just as a refresher, when I use the term algorithm, I'm talking about little rules to mark your point of separation from your clutter, the point at which you're going to let it go. For example, if you haven't worn that dress in the past 6 months, it's time to donate it. Now, that's totally arbitrary. It's just a random point in time to mark a line in the sand. But that line kind of makes a decision for you, right? Once you've decided on a point of no return that you can live with, you can test things against that line and the decision is easy. The goal is to help you get through your decisions quickly and with less emotional roadblocks to slow you down. The problem with our emotions being attached to things is they often prevent us from making practical choices about what we really need to keep or versus what we can shed from our closets and cabinets and garages and storage. Sometimes the reasonable voice, I'll never need this again, gets drowned out by the panic impulse to keep everything or to defer the decision for another day. So we need help listening to our practical voice and not our emotional voice so that we can get the job done. One way to do that is to create algorithms for the various collections we need to edit. We need edit parameters so the collections don't take over the house and we're not crowded out of our space. We want to be able to find things, and ultimately, we don't want to own more than we can manage. If we can think of everything in our space as part of a collection, the clothes collection, the dish collection, the linen collection, the photo collection, then we can work on algorithms for each collection and help ourselves get there. Speaking of which, let's get practical now. Let's create some algorithms for various types of collections. Sometimes the algorithm is set up based on space. The stuff has to fit a defined container. So a space-based algorithm would be made by defining the dimensions of the space. For example, you have one bookcase and the books you keep need to fit in there. Once you filled the bookcase, that's the edge of your space-based parameter, then you have to get rid of books to get new ones. You can't then go buy another bookcase, which is what people usually do. Instead, you say, my parameters are this bookcase, and if it doesn't fit in here, it can't come home. Another one is magazines must fit in this basket. After that, you have to recycle old ones to keep new ones. So you pick a basket size, the magazines go in there, and when that basket is full, and not when it's overflowing onto the floor, but when it's full, it's time to recycle old because you know new ones are coming. Clothes are a good example. All the clothes have to fit on the hanging rod in the closet or they have to fit in one closet. So you can set the parameters based on your closet style. But if I'm trying to decide whether I need to add clothes or not, I'm not going to add them just because I like them. I'm also going to look at my closet and go, okay, I have this new shirt and it came in. And so I need, in order for this not to get tighter and more difficult to find, I need another thing to come out at the same time, because this closet is my parameter for the clothes that I need to keep. And if you filled up one closet and then another closet and then another closet in the other room and another closet in the other room, and then you've got stuff stacked up and sitting on bookshelves and whatever, that you need to think about your clothing to shelter storage ratio and have a conversation with how much clothing you really need to keep in your house.
Gail, another great example of this type of rule came from Bella, who said, for utensil trays, if the utensil doesn't fit in the tray, then we give it away.
I don't know why. Utensils are very useful, right? A fork is always a fork and always works as a fork. So it's great to have, and it is useful. But when you have 50 forks and they won't actually fit in the utensil tray without falling over or interfering with the other things in the tray, it's super annoying, right? And so deciding that you can have as many as will fit in the tray and then you've got enough is a perfectly reasonable thing to do.
Well, and I think she may be talking too about the big stuff, cooking utensils.
Oh, that too. And, exactly.
You know, there some things like ladles are hard to fit in drawers. We always have some kind of bucket type thing that holds the ones that won't go in drawers, but that itself sets a limit on how many things,
right,
of that type we can have.
The counter container, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people hate that look, but the object is really just, here's a drawer for cooking utensils and let it be, if it fits in there and we can close the drawer and we can find the things that we use easily, and it's not a hassle to go in and out and get what you want, then that's enough. But you don't want to just keep stuffing more things in the utensil drawer until it is completely stuffed full, the whole cubic volume is full, and you can't barely open the drawer. Then you're never going to find the one you want. And having all that variety does you no good. So it is a good print. That drawer is a good parameter. Okay, so some other space parameters might be all the craft materials must fit in this room. Like, the parameter can be the room as well. Crafters know that you pick a room and you fill it, and then you start taking over other parts of the house, and it goes to the dining room, and it goes to the chair of the living room, and it ends up in the second bedroom, and it's sort of a spreads like an amoeba around your area. So deciding that all the craft materials must fit in the designated studio is a good parameter for filtering your craft materials.
Now, all kidding aside, I think it needs to really be a little narrower than that. You know, it has to fit in this rack and these three trays and this part of my work table.
And this cabinetry and
this closet, the end.
Yeah, I just
not
know,
just I can still walk into the room while carrying more, therefore I don't have too much yet.
Right. Well, we're doing step down parameters at this point. So
okay.
We're going from the crafting has taken over the entire house to let's pull it back to one room.
Fair enough.
And then the next round is, can I actually walk in the room? Can I use it? Right. Okay. So the algorithm can also be based on variety or usefulness. How many uses does an item have, or how many tasks can it perform? How useful is it in more than one way? Think of the objects in your kitchen for a second. The pandemic got many of us cooking at home again in ways we haven't done for many years. And after that experience, it's a good time to ask some new questions about the kitchen gear in your house and set some parameters based on the time of concentrated use. Like this time when you were cooking at home because nobody was going anywhere for nothing and you were bored and you started making bread and trying out recipes and testing things and cooking for the family three times a day. And nobody had done that for a long time. So it was a good pressure cooker environment to test all the usefulness of the kitchen. And having had that experience, it's probably a good time to go look at the gear again and ask these questions. Have I used this kitchen item over the past 2 years? If cooking at home during a pandemic didn't make you use it, what other extraordinary circumstance will cause you to use it? Can you declare that as cool as this item is, I'm not ever actually going to use it ever and I can let it go? This is a good question. If it didn't pass muster over the past 2 years, it's probably never going to pass muster. So you might as well send that one on. Think of all your weird kitchen appliances. It's a good time to ask about their usefulness versus their footprint. For items that are so big that they have to sit on the counter, like the Mixmaster, do I actually use it? Did I buy it for a purpose that either never came to pass or has happened and now will never happen again? Like, oh, I'm going to make bread dough from scratch and I need this 50-pound Mixmaster in order to do that. And now I've made bread and I'm super bored with that, or I'm super annoyed, or it wasn't as much fun as I thought it would be, or I'm never going to have that much free time again. And so maybe you used it and now it's retirable, or maybe you loved it and it makes perfect sense and you're going to keep using it forever and you should always have it. But asking yourself now, did I use it and is it worth giving up 2 feet on my kitchen counter to have it as an option, is a good test of usefulness versus footprint and setting parameters around that. I have given it 2 feet of space on my counter. Does it deserve it? Should it have it? Is a good filter for the contents. Ed suggested asking about the cookware. What about your cookware? Maybe you've decided you don't want to use nonstick cookware anymore. Well, if you've done that, then does it have a nonstick surface is the perfect parameter to decide whether it stays in the kitchen or not. Another good one is, does it go in the dishwasher? If you have this piece of cookware and it has to be hand washed every time you use it, is that super annoying? Is that going to stop you from using the pan because it's, you know, when you get to the end, you're going to have to sit there and hand scrub it all out. Maybe it's too big to put in the dishwasher. Maybe it's too big to comfortably manhandle in the sink. Like, there's all kinds of cleaning reasons that you may not want to keep a piece of cookware. So ask yourself, will this fit in the dishwasher so it's easy to manage? And if it isn't, is it worth me keeping it if I have to struggle so hard to clean it every time I use it? You want to check out the food and spices that you bought to experiment with while you were cooking at home. You know, you shipped off for some weird spices or you bought some food to try out on your family. So you have to ask yourself, did my family like this food or would I like to use this spice again? Ask those questions to help you evaluate all the new things that appeared in your kitchen that you'd never used before. It might be time to send those things off to a friend or a food pantry or off it up to next door. I tried this spice once. My family hated it. Who wants this spice? Like, you can make them go to the next person and see if they want it, if you're not going to ever cook with it again. I know that there was a lot of pandemic-born experimentation happening in kitchens. And so everybody has a lot of ingredients in their kitchen that they will never use again. So it's time to filter. Algorithms for paper sorting can also be around usefulness. Paper really needs to be useful and not just be present. Paper always has data on it that can be useful. And so you want to filter it based on how useful that data is to you now. So the trick is to decide if you can retrieve that data a different way than actually on the paper, or if the paper itself is the most useful to you. And algorithms around paper include, does this paper support a number on my tax return? So it needs to be part of my tax records. Does this paper show a large purchase of a durable good, like the house or a car or a washing machine or a computer? Is this paper about a current or an expired insurance policy? Expired policies are no longer in force. So when it was in force, it's useful data. But when the policy is no longer in force, it's not useful data anymore. Does this owner's manual cover something I still own or no longer own? If I don't own the item, you can chuck the manual. If you don't, it's useful while you own the item, but it's not useful if you don't own it. And so that's one of the things that people drop the ball on a lot. They just keep adding new manuals into the file that they have, and they never go back and pull out the things that they've long since thrown away because it's broken or got given away or whatever. The last one I want to talk about here is about algorithms around keepsakes. These are the most emotionally laden objects you own, and keepsakes are by definition items we're keeping for sentimental reasons and no other. It's a category of stuff we all have, and we have too much of it. And this definitely needs some practical parameters to thin it down. So I made a list here. First is there a way I can use this keepsake and enjoy it? Can you upcycle it in your house? Can you, it used to be used for A and you can use it for B and still be, you can still have it and use it and enjoy it. Is there a theme that ties these items together so I can display it as a collection? These are all the, we were just talking about cooking. These are all the specialty kitchen items that I got from my grandmother that are so cool because they were my grandmother's, but you would never actually use them to cook anymore. But it's kind of a little kitchen collection and it doesn't need to be mixed in with your kitchen gear. It can just be a display collection of cool kitchen stuff or craft items that you would not. Here's some old tools that people used to use and now I'm not into them anymore, but would I display them as a collection? If there's a theme that makes it seem interesting to you, historical to you, pleasing to you, colorful to you, and you can join them together as a theme and display it as, in essence, art, so that you can look at it, then having that collection makes sense. If it's not really something that you want to tie together with the theme, then it has to pass some other musters to make sense to keep it. Is there a way to preserve the memories while reducing the bulk? Can you still have the memories about your grandmother and not have the 50 things that came from her house? Maybe you keep 10 things that came from her house instead. Does it have a meaning for someone else and I can give it away to them now? Can I pass this keepsake on to the next generation or to my sibling or to my friend who finds this stuff interesting? If it's meaningful to someone else beside you, it might be easy to say, someone else loves this. I can give it to them now. I don't have to wait until I pass away for them to have it. What would a representative sample of this stuff look like? What would that be? Can you take a collection of things that are keepsakes and pull a representative sample out of the pile? And you can apply that to photographs, schoolwork, paperwork, objects. There's all that representative sample parameter. What's the best 20% of this collection and keeping the best 20% and letting the excess go? That's a great way to think about it. What's a cool representative sample of this stuff? You can have a container related one. One box of school keepsakes for each kid is enough. This is my box. When that box is full, I either need to be throwing some of the things out or I need to be no longer adding to it or have a one in out policy. But this is the box that I'm going to send to my kid of keepsakes. And trust me, a bigger box is not better. Imagine that kid receiving the box and whether they're going to roll their eyes at you or not when you send it to them. I think it's important to know that every kid thinks some amount of keepsakes is fun. But no kid wants 15 boxes shipped to them. So deciding a parameter that you're comfortable with, maybe it's a moving box, maybe it's a document box, maybe it's some shipping container size box and three big items that don't fit in there, whatever the parameters are, but setting a container size related to keepsakes is a good way to filter. You can have a subject matter filter, like photos for people that you remember, and keep a representative sample of each event. Here's 5 to 10 photos of a Christmas or a birthday or a vacation. Instead of the 200 photos that your parents took of that Christmas, you can pick 5 or 10 of them. They're really great and still have memories of Christmas and not have to have 100 photos or 200 photos instead. You also want to filter the photos to the people that you remember. I think that's important. There's often photos of people that you have no clue who they are. If you think they're a family member, it might be worth passing them in front of another relative who might be able to identify them. But if it's random photos of people in the background or people at the party down the street that your parents went to or that school kids when you were little and you don't remember the kid anymore. Like there's lots of pictures of people that are now meaningless to you because you don't remember who they are. And sending those on their way, filtering down those out of the pile makes the photos shrink. There's also one last parameter I want to talk about in terms of algorithms. I'm sure in your lifetime, you've gone through your keepsakes more than once. And you've also had a process of adding to the keepsakes and never going back through them again. What you added into the keepsakes 10 years ago may no longer feel as important. So having a parameter that you circle back 5 years later or 10 years later and go through the keepsakes that went in 10 years ago or 5 years ago and seeing if they're still important now versus when you first put them in. They may have seemed really important when you first put them in, but with the passing of time and the fading of the event and the separation from those people, some of those keepsakes might not feel as important anymore. And so kids go through this when they leave school, when you leave high school and you go to college and you go away, and all these things that you left in the closet that were so important and you needed to keep them because they were so special, because you were in high school when you put them away, you come back to them at the end of college or after you've gotten married and you look at them, you're like, why did I save this? What was the point of that? So we go through moments in time where it seems really important in the moment and later on it's not so important. And so having a parameter that if it's in keepsakes, I have to go back and look at it later and filter it and make sure it still is a keepsake that's worthy of staying is a good way to keep the keepsake from not growing and taking over exponential amounts of space of your house. It's a good way to filter it. The goal of any algorithm you adopt is to cultivate listening to the small voice in your head that's saying, you're not going to need that. You're not going to wear that. You're never going to fix that. Instead of the louder voice that says, what if I need it someday? For all those things to which you feel emotionally attached, remember that you want to release the clutter from your care and let it return to a neutral state so that someone else can collect it anew. No one can use it if it's crammed into your overstuffed house. So set it free to flow down the river of stuff and be captured by someone else. And my standard disclaimer on this topic is, if these arbitrary rules don't work for you, make up ones that do. These are my suggestions, but they can be shifted or changed however you need, so you can use them in your situation. So does anybody want to share their algorithm ideas with the group?
Gail, I had a question about about tech. And I think this may be a little bit of a husband problem is what I'm getting.
It's a husband problem. Okay.
But you know, I think people hold on to a lot of tech because it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so what do you encounter this? Like they bought new speakers, but he still has the old speakers squirreled away somewhere. And there's the previous printer and the printer before that.
Oh,
and the accessories that go with them.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Can you suggest an algorithm there? I mean, besides the obvious, it doesn't work anymore. So it needs to go.
Right. So if it's broken and that's the reason you bought the new printer, then that's super obvious. It needs to go, right? Like broken stuff out the door. And if it needs to go to tech recycling, great, you can do that. But it definitely needs to go out the door. If it's not broken and you just bought the new printer because you wanted the new printer that was newer, faster, better, then you're giving yourself the reason to let go of the old one anyway. If the new one is newer, faster, better, and it was worth you buying for the new accessories, the new applications, the new functionality that makes it more current and makes it interact better with the current tech, then letting go of one that is old and slower and not as interactive is a good reason to let it go. We live in the age where tech outstrips itself all the time, and they come up with better versions of themselves all the time. And then the one that you have still works in theory, but it's not like a washing machine where it'll keep doing the wash until 25 years later, even though they've come up with better and faster washing machines. The tech gets older and stops working, stops interacting and playing well with the newer stuff, right? And so it gets harder and harder to do its original function because it just sort of gets behind in structure, in hardware, in software. It all gets outdated, basically. And so even if it still works, if it's 10 years old, it's going to have a hard time playing with anything new that you have. And so it's one of those things where you should have passed it away, passed it down a long time ago so that someone else could actually use it. Now, if you pass it on, even though it works, it's not going to interact or play with for anybody else either, not just you. And so it's not very useful to someone to get a 20-year-old printer that still works when it can't really talk to the current stuff. And so this is one of those things where you have to filter out, yeah, it may still work, but has it lived too long in the tech world to really make sense? And so it, again, recycle that one.
I think another good standard there could be, do I cringe at the thought of using it? You know, and this is less a thing for hardware. I'm good at getting rid of hardware, but I'm not really good at letting, you know, old apps and things go. You think things that have moved from one laptop to the next laptop to the next laptop. And
yeah.
They work so poorly or slowly, and they've stopped. It's something they've stopped updating. It's hard to let go of that, but I think that should be my rule. Do I cringe when I think about using it?
And if you do, then I think it doesn't need to be there for sure. Absolutely.
Well, and M said, I hold on to tech because I don't know what the items are used for. And I'm curious to know more about that. Are these things that were your husband's that have been left behind with you? And I think that if you don't know what it's used for, you should probably set it free.
Yeah, I would say that too. And yes, left behind and usable, she says. Okay. So if you don't want to use them, then I think donating something that's working and letting somebody else figure out how to use it is the best way to let it go at this point. You don't have to figure it out. If you think it's useful and you think it still works, then just donate it and let someone else figure it out. Because the person that collects it will be somebody who actually uses it. It'll be somebody that knows what it is and knows how to use it, and not somebody who does it. And so I think you can just send those on their way and let the next right person find it.
Kara offered some great rules. She said, shoes, if the sole is worn down on a corner, out. Clothes.
There you go.
Clothes. Discovered I like cotton, wool, linen the best. Other stuff, out. It has to feel good on my body. Extra office supplies, not using, give away or get rid of. Yarn or quilt supplies, little scraps, go bye-bye.
There you go. You don't need to keep up with the little scraps. You don't need to keep shoes that you think are too worn. And, you know, it's why have clothes in the closet that you don't feel comfortable wearing? Like, that is such a grown-up perspective, right? When you're 20, you wear it, even if it feels horrible, because it looks good. Yeah. And at our age, we're like, yeah, we don't care. Does it feel good? That's what we care about. Is it uncomfortable? Is it pleasant? And, you know, if it's uncomfortable, out it goes. It's not worth the suffering anymore.
Penny said, I want a digital photo frame so I can see a changing display that won't take up space. They are great. They're terrific.
That's a great idea.
We got one for mom and dad, and it's, I think we've talked about it here before, but it's, you know, it's about a, I think we got one for them that's about 8x10, and there's an email address for it. So you can write, if you send a photo to this particular email address for mom and dad, it shows up on, say mom and dad. Mom's been gone, you know, a year, but
right.
It still shows up on the photo frame at dad's place. So it's a fun way that the kids and grandkids can surprise granddad with new photos.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that's a new, like, the digital frame started out as a good idea but they had to be manually loaded. So this is a cool way that it can, like, it be it's interactive and can be, you know, updated all the time. That's pretty cool. I like that extra feature.
And you don't have to, right. And the non-tech savvy 91-year-old does not have to ever mess with it. He right? just has to turn it on.
Right. And then the stuff just appears. See, that's awesome.
Marshmallow shared, I had a shoebox of old cell phones. Local Fred Meyers has a kiosk where they take some of these cell phones. I'm not familiar with Fred Meyers. I guess it must be a store,
right?
Yeah, regional store. Mm-hmm. And she said, I made $262 on four of the phones.
Woohoo. That's great. Yeah, sometimes you get a quarter. Sometimes you get actual money. But at least you recycled them. And congratulations for getting that done. And it makes a huge difference to like get them out of the house. You don't want to be chasing them around. I collect them for clients a lot. And then like I collect a bundle of them. And then when I get a box full, I send them off to be, you know, zapped and reclaimed. And it, you know, it's amazing to me how many people have, oh, I have these five spare cell phones in the house. Will you take them away? Yeah. Let me add them to my bucket.
Anya shared, my husband has three loudspeaker sets in his room, though he uses just one.
Oh, he loves his speakers, does he? Yeah, so that may be a negotiation. Like, can we get him from three to two? can we donate these? Can we offer these up for sale? Can we divest ourselves of these extra speakers? What the hell?
Abby said, some women's centers take old cell phones for women to be able to contact the cops if the ex shows up.
Yeah, I've heard that before, and it would be worth checking to find out, are they still doing that? Is that still a program that you can access?
Yeah.
And it'd be a great idea.
Well, and I would think any place that is helping refugees might have a similar program. And Naomi reminded, remember that the one you are replacing is at its maximum value today. So sell or give it away today. That's a good point. Yeah, if you replace last year's phone with this year's phone and wait until next year, the one you're phasing out will have lost about half of its value.
Right. So you might as well sell it now. Yeah, and that's the nature of the tech, right? That's the tech environment. It filters itself out really quickly. It goes to die very fast.
Susan says, if you save it long enough, maybe the Smithsonian will be interested eventually. I think a lot of guys think that what they're holding on to will have some spectacular appreciation and value at some point. And there is very, very little tech that anyone is really interested in paying money for as vintage.
Yeah.
And I think a way to disabuse yourself of the notion that something you're hanging on to will have vintage value is see if you could look for it on eBay. See what one is selling for today.
Yeah. Is anybody trying to buy one?
Yeah. And for most things, the answer is going to be, oh yeah, this is not worth what it would take for me to take it.
It's not worth the hassle.
Toss it in the trash.
And I also think that's, you know, that's guy speak for, I can't be bothered to deal with this. So I'm going to claim that it's going to be worth something someday so I can ignore it.
Amanda's got a great one here. And I'm totally guilty of this. I'm keeping it as a backup. If your new one broke, here's a real hard question to ask yourself. If your new one broke, would you actually use your backup or would you rush out to buy a replacement?
Oh, good point, right? Like if you decide that you would rather spend the money to go make it disappear, to go make a replacement happen, then yeah, that whole, it's a backup. So I have a backup pair of glasses in case I sit on one and so that I can still walk around. But even so, it's one of those things that, how often do you think you're going to need a backup and how many backups do you think you can have? And likely if you've talked yourself into keeping a backup, you really have two or three or four or five backups out there somewhere And so you need to at least filter those out so that there's only one.
Keep only the latest. Yeah.
Only the latest. Yeah.
Exactly. I do that with running shoes. When they're not really great anymore, I save them for if I get caught in the rain or otherwise get my shoes too wet to wear, then I always have one backup pair, but I change them frequently enough that suddenly I discover that I have four backup pairs.
And your shoes are big and they take up a lot of room.
Oh,
man.
They do. Yeah.
They crowd out your closet. You got to make those go.
Okay. We're running out of time, but I want to share one more comment that I think is really useful. Connie said, for me, I found that if I start my decluttering project by making a hard decision to get rid of something that I value but don't need anymore, for example, old wedding invitations, then I can use that experience as a baseline going forward. For example, is this sock with a hole in it better than the wedding invitations I just got rid of? If yes, then keep. But if no, then toss.
Love that example. That's great. Yeah, if you can suck it up and let the wedding invitations go. I think that's so funny because people always buy, engraved wedding invitations. And over my career, I have found so many leftover wedding stuff, and wedding invitations is one of them. And there's always the 3 boxes of 100 that they bought, and 125 of them got used, and 175 of them are still sitting there. And it's like, the wedding has already happened. You're on your 25th wedding anniversary. You're not mailing these out. Like, they're not going anywhere. So you paid for them, but you will never use them. And it is just waste paper that you're keeping up with. So keep 3 of them as examples of your wedding invitation when you know you've got 4 of them squirreled away somewhere else already. And let's recycle this paper. Like, that's just insane. So happens a lot. I love it as a parameter for, I feel so attached and feel so excited about my wedding invitation. It was so hard to let go of them. And if something is harder or easier than the wedding invitation to let go, is an interesting parameter. I like it.
Okay, I'll answer one more question. Penny asked what brand, and the photo frame we bought is Pixstar, PIX-STAR. And we've been very happy with it. So haven't had any problem. It was very easy to set up, and we've never had any trouble using it. So I feel like I can endorse that comfortably.
It was a good one, right?
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about next week.
Okay.
Gail is going to be traveling next week, so we will have no show next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Tuesday, June 14th at noon US Central Time. We're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to have more of a roundtable discussion. And this is the Marie Kondo episode that we've been promising you for a couple of years. Marie Kondo helped kick the decluttering movement into high gear with her best-selling book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. The KonMari method tossed out a lot of the conventional wisdom of the organizing industry and introduced a new approach. So in our next episode, we're going to talk with people in our group who've used the KonMari method about how it worked for them or how it didn't work for them, what worked and what didn't. Join us on June 14th for Throwing Off Sparks, the KonMari method in philosophy and practice.
I think it'll be a really interesting discussion, and the people that we've tapped have asked to be making comments are people that have said, I tried it and these have been my experiences. And so we're going to have actual users talking about it. And I think it'll be a fascinating conversation. So
yeah, and if you've indicated to us that you were interested in participating, we'll be sending you email. We'll probably send something to the entire mailing list. We're going to send out a list of quotations from the book and some questions that we hope will shake loose discussion. So watch, if you're not on the mailing list, you should get on the mailing list. Would you hold up that sign?
I will.
And you can join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. So we will send you a link to, it'll be a Google Drive document where you can read the quotations and questions, and even answer them online if you feel so inclined. You don't have to, but we'd love that. Or if you want to give us your thoughts on these questions, but won't be able to attend on June 14th, you could send them to us before then and we'll incorporate them.
Yeah, feel free to send us thoughts if you're not available.
Yeah. So let's talk about the tittle.
Okay, so this week's tittle is You Make the Rules. This week's assignment is to design an algorithm for evaluating a category of clutter that gets you stuck. Select a category. Here's a collection of items that frequently gets you stuck as you're trying to declutter your home. Design an algorithm to guide your keep DOS decisions. This may be one simple rule, such as, I'll only keep the t-shirts that I've worn in the last year, or maybe it's several rules. For example, I'll keep cookware that I've used in the last 2 years, but I'll only keep pans that can go through the dishwasher. You get to decide whether an item has to satisfy any condition or all of them to go in the keep pile. Write your rules in big print and post them where you'll be able to refer to them as you process items that need thinning. Use your rules for a session or two of decluttering. And if you find that you're still keeping too many items from the category in question, go adjust the algorithm and try to make it a little tougher. Make the parameters a little tighter for what can stay versus what needs to go. And see if you can help yourself declutter with less emotional stress. That's ultimately what we're trying to do there, is give you some mechanical, practical ways to say, nope, here's the line. It doesn't pass the line. It has to go, and see if that makes it easier for you to declutter.
Excellent.
We look forward to it coming next week.
The week after next.
Yeah.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep those questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. And you can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
We're so happy to see you guys every week. Thank you for coming back and joining us. And we will see you next time. I will be in Philadelphia for the NAPA board meeting, which is why I won't be there. But we'll miss you and think of you and see you after that. Bye.
Bye-bye.